Welcome to Conversations with the Authors.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Conversations with the Authors. I'm your host, Daniel.
I'm Daryl.
I'm Sandra.
And I'd like to thank you for pressing the play button, and I'd like to thank Alexander Nakarada for the intro, as always. It's been a number of episodes, and I still get goosebumps every time I hear it. Today we're going to talk about something else that gives me goosebumps, and these are the authors that have inspired writing in science fiction and fantasy storytelling. My obsession with writing started because of a movie you showed me, Dan, that was written by Alan J. Lerner, and the music for its musical was done by Frederick Lowe, the Camelot film. I had an obsession with King Arthur.
I remember that.
Yeah, I went into the Arthurian lore and the things that sort of made it... so special and unique.
Looking for a stone to pull a sword from.
Yeah, the idea of this, kingdom of Camelot being hidden on this, certainly it's Europe, but there's the mythos that there was this magical island of Avalon and where this might have been, and I started digging the histories of Sir Thomas Malory and where, he would say that the epitaph of Arthur was that here lies the once and future king. So that always sort of perpetuated me into the idea of, medieval fantasy and sort of tying reality with fantasy, because the history was so interweaved with the mythology of it, it sort of pulled me in that direction. And Sandy and Daryl, what is it that, who inspired you when you really started getting into writing? What authors or novels or stories do you tend to pull from that keeps you writing?
I think when I was in high school, one of the stories that really fascinated me was 2001: A Space Odyssey, mm-hmm. by Arthur C. Clarke. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And later, I thought he was just an author, and then I found out he was also a physicist, and he was a futurist too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can find some things on the internet about him talking about the future, but it was so fascinating. And the day that I saw it was the night. It was also the night they landed on the moon.
Okay.
So I made a celebration of it. See that.
Sandy, what about you?
Well, there were two that really got me started, and this Alice in Wonderland series was written by Lewis Carroll, and the second was The Old Man and the Sea by mm-hmm. Ernest Hemingway. I read the book first because I had to. Mm-hmm. It was mandatory reading in grade school, 7th and 8th grade in mm-hmm. high school. And I got the lowest grades ever when mm-hmm. I read
that
book.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
And then my dad took me fishing, and we read the book while we were fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And it made the whole book different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just want to be a little more accurate in what I said. It was 69. It was when they went around them, when they hadn't landed yet. Mm-hmm. But go on.
You know, I think, like I was saying before, I've always been interested in those stories that tie reality and fiction together. Be it fantasy or sci-fi. And I think that's what's great about your story is that you take these minute aspects of reality and you tie them, you interweave them into fantasy. It reminds me of another author. Pardon my scratching, my beard was itchy. The wonderful Wizard of Oz, written by L. Frank Baum. But of course, there are other influences that not necessarily weave reality, but Frank Oz, who did the Dark Crystal, which is a cult classic, which is often related to Jim Henson. Henson, who was also linked to the Star Wars series written by George Lucas.
It was Oz that did Yoda, right?
Yes, which again ties fantasy to reality. So that's sort of what kind of keeps me motivated when it comes to writing. I often reflect on those kinds of authors. Sandy, are there other authors that perhaps keep you driving or want to pay homage to? Daryl, perhaps?
Well, you know, I like H.G. Wells.
Mm. Yeah, oh, yes.
Oh, oh man, you know, because he was kind of father of that science fiction. He did the time machine.
Yes.
And people have copied the time. You know, did you know that the I don't know if it was the director or the producer who did the more recent version of the time machine was his great grandson.
Right? That's interesting. Yeah. See, I didn't know that. Yeah. You know, and I was wondering if, and I don't know this, which is why I'm wondering whether H.G. Wells was sort of the godfather of, you know, sort of time travel. I think he's really, and if not, he certainly affected the genre as such. But also there's the War of the Worlds.
Consider that, I think, one of the first ones, yes, if not the first.
Which, again, I mean, even now we see it reflected in screens and books and writing, and it's really changed everything. The radio broadcast of it was so convincing that people, in fact, went into a fright and were like arming themselves and barring convincing. Their doors. They were convinced. Remember, people, this is a time when television was not a thing. People got their entertainment from radio. This how we are communicating now is how they communicated then. And to hear this convincing story about this alien invasion had people in a fright and had literally started barring the doors and arming themselves for this alien. Try the peace for this alien.
It was Orson Welles, right?
Yeah. Orson Welles was an advocate, a big seller of sci-fi and frozen peas. Sandy, thoughts?
Sometimes it's not who you read, it's how you combine the authors that you've read.
Yes,
and
that'll help you to make your own
your
unique
own
style.
Your own talents evolving.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I know a few authors that were in my writing class who would only read books in their own genre because they didn't want to add anything from outside genres.
Yeah.
But and then my instructor would say, your work is flat. It's flat. It doesn't go anywhere.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I remember listening to
a work is flat.
I remember hearing a interview from Michael Bublé, and he was talking about how he was, you know, getting into the industry and singers that he liked and singers that he would imitate. And he was speaking with another classic singer who had just recently passed, whose name unfortunately escapes. He's a great, 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 great guy, you know. And
Tony Bennett.
Yes, Tony Bennett. He was telling.
So that was a good impression.
He was telling the story. He's like, it's great to sing like other authors, but you need to come up with your own voice. You pick what you like and you sing with it, and it becomes your own voice. And I think that's in essence what you're saying is you find these authors and you learn how to mix it and sort of make it your own. Another inspiration for me, and if you don't know the name, I guarantee you, you know the rules of robotics, because Isaac Asimov, one of the great sci-fi writer, came up with these three arguably imperfect laws of robotics that you see everywhere in science fiction.
You know that they're so classic. And they have such staying power and meaning that other writers and other movies have picked them up and used those very rules.
Yes.
It's just like in the Bram Stoker's Dracula, when they came up rules about how to kill a
vampire.
A vampire. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a stake in the heart, you know, how to repel him, you know, with the garlic or whatever.
Right.
You know, and other authors pick those things up because they've become staid rules. mm-hmm. that you just don't break. Stay out of the light.
You know, it's interesting. Another author who influences, I'm certainly Daryl must influence you in your writing as a sci-fi writer, is that masterpiece that we even saw a glimpse of in the Barbie movie with Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling, 2001 Space Odyssey.
Oh yes, as I mentioned before, that's that was one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. You know, by Arthur C. Clarke again.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are so many things that, you know, drive our ability to write and what inspires us. You know, C.S. Lewis, he came up with the Chronicles of Narnia series, which, Sandy, I know is one of your favorites.
That's always one of my favorites.
And
awesome.
It's those stories that sort of dive deep into fantasy, like Tolkien with his Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit series.
Which are also one of my favorites.
Those are sort of what pull me towards
fantasy. Did you know that Tolkien was, I believe he was an officer. He fought in World War I, and I think it was in France where he and other people of a certain town had to stay underground.
Right,
and he got the ideas, probably pulled a lot of ideas about Middle Earth and all of that, because they had to stay in caves underground away from bombing in
right.
World War I.
Yeah. Right. You know, I don't know if this is necessarily a trope, but I think it certainly had its influence in media and writing, is the Tarzan series, which was written by Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Edgar Rice Burroughs, yeah.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's really just, I think, more so the fact that we like to throw our contemporary characters back in time, back to some, you know, primeval or, you know, primal. How are you going to make it through? What happens if you take a guy here and throw him in there? A Lost Island kind of way.
Yes, fish out of water.
I think it's where that fish out of water, like you said, Daryl, comes from. It's just amazing how these authors and works have really sort of left their mark on society, on writing, on creative structure. I mean, but even so, going back to things to you know, the original bard himself, William Shakespeare, you know, with Romeo and Juliet, and with you know, A Midsummer's Night Dream, you see these ideas, you know, proliferate.
Yeah.
Through writing.
Oh,
I mean, these have become tropes that we build upon. It's like, well, let's take the Romeo and Juliet approach and do this, that, and the other thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just, what do you think it is that really solidifies these authors and really makes them? Is it because they were the first to do that which they've done, or is it the way they've told the stories?
It's the way they applied their stories,
mm-hmm.
the way they applied what right. they had read and their surroundings around them and what they wanted you to, they chose an emotion or a set of emotions and...
Well, you know, yeah. and I think that as time's gone over the centuries, you know, science...
Yes.
developed,
uh-huh.
and we've had imaginations about what science could do.
Right.
And I think some people have gained some knowledge about that over the new science,
yeah.
you know, as we become more scientific, especially after the Enlightened
right.
Age, you know, we started applying what our thoughts of the future might be and how things could evolve and what kind of magical things, almost magical, like Arthur C.
Yes.
Clarke would say, you know, could happen. He said, said that more technical our science becomes, yes, the more it can be perceived as magic.
Right.
You know, in some form or another, he said
and
that.
And the irony is that if you remember the film Thor, where he was acting opposite Natalie Portman, I don't remember which specifically the story was. Natalie, the scientist, was telling Thor that, you know, this was all, you know, this magic is impossible. You know, I'm a person of science or something in this, I'm inferring. And he says, well, in my world, magic and science are one and the same. It's interesting because I heard something that sounded like Joe Rogan. I mean, I don't know if it was he or AI at this point. But they were saying that perhaps there was a time in which the pyramids were being born, that it's, that something cataclysmic happened, and that that which allowed society to flourish and have all of these advancements and do these things that they have done threw them back into the Stone Age, quote unquote. And now we're rediscovering this technology. And, you know, I don't know if that's true or not, but it's an interesting thought. And it makes you reflect on that idea of science versus magic, because sometimes we like to say, oh, well, you know, these pyramids and things have all these magical, you know, properties, you know, these 16th century, 12th century European or Italian, you know, buildings and such, artifacts have all of these magical properties. Is it magical properties or is it scientific, you know, technology that we have yet to understand or need to re-understand?
You know, and it's interesting that you said that, because Arthur Clarke once wrote and described three types of mysteries. And the first type was the mystery of the first kind, something that was once utterly baffling, but is now completely understood. For instance, a rainbow.
Right.
And the second would be something that is certainly not fully understood and can be in the future. And the last and the third was something of which we have no understanding.
Absolutely. And, you know, and we've talked about this back in Myths and Mythologies. That's basically what mythology was about. It was about how do we explain things that we have no understanding of. There's no scientific literacy to explain why the sun is traveling from one side of the world to the other side of the world. Is it really rotating around us, or is it being dragged in a chariot by horses through the sky?
You know what? By chariot.
Right.
I think human beings, our tendency is that we want to understand how the universe works. If we can't find facts,
right,
like human beings, sometimes we make it up.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, we do.
And sometimes when we make it up, it's a really good story.
And you know who was a great presenter of that, and that we used to watch when we were kids, was Rod Serling.
Rod Serling.
Twilight Zone. It was the Twilight Zone, because anything that you thought, what if the complication of the what would be the complication of this, and he would find a way to present it in the most.
I think that's you know, what if is one of the seminal questions that you have foremost in your mind when you're writing science fiction. You know, we know this and this happens, but what if this happens?
I think it's often my nephew will ask me, "Hey, Uncle Danny, what if dot dot dot." And that is the number one question, I think, that all authors are confronted with before they start, you know, drawing a pen across paper.
And from there springs forth a story.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. And I think what makes these stories, like we've referred to, and your story comparable, is, as we've often talked about before, it's the resonance. There are these bits and pieces of sci-fi and fantasy which mesh together, which resonate with humanity. There are these bits and pieces that we have to have in there that we can connect with, which your story, how Nicholas became Santa Claus, does so well. And while you have these wonderful, fantastic moments in the story, you also have these beautiful resonance with everything that happens in the story, from the sights to the smells to the actions to the things you see and even the things you don't see. It really really grabs you and pulls you in. Mm-hmm. And I think, dear listeners and readers, if you want to really know what I'm talking about, you can check out our book at facebook.com, where you can see the troop book is the tag. You can visit our Instagram, our TikTok, there's a link where you can visit the author page at the U-Wings Publishing, and you can purchase a hardcover or soft cover of the book. And hopefully you found this conversation to be resonating and interesting. And we will talk with you next time on Conversations with the Authors.